Are you a cake maker running a business or a business owner making cakes? Hi, I'm Sammy.
Hi, I'm Bronya, and welcome to the Business of Cake Making. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Business of Cake Making. We are so excited today because we have got Paul Bradford and David Price from Cakeflix with us. Cakeflix is an award-winning online cake school and education program. Quite frankly, if you're in the cake business and you don't know about Cakeflix, where have you been? So thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
I know, it's very exciting. Look forward to hearing all your questions.
Oh, I hope they live up to expectations. Right, so to start, how did you start out in the cake world? How did you transition from what you were doing in the cake world to being an online cake school?
Well, it all started with ourselves way back when I was a wee boy in Scotland, and my gran used to do baking at the weekends, and I used to go down and stay with the gran at the weekend, and we used to make scones and cakes and all that kind of stuff for the church or for sort of coffee mornings. And I just, all the way through my sort of primary school days and into secondary school, I just loved baking, and wasn't so good at school, but I was good at the baking side. And I just decided to take a career. At that point, I thought I was going to be a chef. And luckily, my careers advisor thought, no, you're definitely more suited to the sort of sugar world rather than the savoury world. Mm. And that's where it all began. So, I just went straight from high school to college, did 2 years full time baking, craft baking, baking technology, and was very lucky to get a good apprenticeship during the time there, and a very old baker's, 100-year-old baker in Linlithgow. Where I started from the bottom and worked my way up. So there was no, I didn't get the gap year that all the young ones get these days. Yeah. It was straight out of college, and then the next day straight into a full-time job, and did 5 years in the bakery. And then we got our first shop after the 5 years, or I got my first shop after 5 years. And then about a year later, David gave up his career in the army and the civil service, and burned his jacket one day and decided he was going to be a baker and work in the cake shop.
That's quite a jump.
Yep. The funny story is David's boss, David was ranked quite high up in the Scottish government, and his actual boss came in to order a cake, and David was in the middle of baking chocolate cakes and came through his apron on to serve his big boss.
Everyone went, oh, how times have changed.
Yeah, exactly. And and then we had the cake shop for just under 10 years. And wow. At one point we had 35 staff and five shops.
Five shops. And we did a bakery and a cupcake cafe bar on top of that. So it was quite wow. A busy little business.
Yeah, we're turning over the sort of million point at that point. We're also spending a million at that point. Yeah, yes. But yeah, so it was a big business. And and then we had at the winter of 2010, was it?
Yeah, so yeah. It was the winter of 2010 in Scotland, where I think the whole country just ground to a standstill because of the snow. It was Maisie Parrish who was up teaching for us at the time. So Paul had started to do some teaching, and then Maisie was up with her husband and she'd been running some classes, and we only just got her out before the snow really came down very heavy. Wow. And that was pretty much it for 5 or 6 weeks. So, literally the main motorway between Glasgow and Edinburgh just couldn't open at all. So, you know, businesses, you can imagine, you know, you've got weddings going on and you can't get cakes out to them. You've got weddings that are being cancelled and you've made the cakes. You've got staff who are still needing paid.
And there was no furloughing back then, was there?
There was no furloughing, no. It was all really, really, really tight. And, of course, for most cake people, they know that, the winter is the quieter time anyway. So, you know, if you've got, you know, kind of slow cash flow, it's a big, big problem. And because we had the seven outlets, we had seven lots of overheads. And of course, they just kept charging. So it was a difficult time, but that was really the the start of the online tutorials. I mean, I'd been trying to persuade Paul for about a year before then to have a go at online tutorials, but he wasn't really convinced. But
so how can you teach someone to make a cake on the TV screen?
Yeah. Oh, what you knew, if only you knew then, eh?
Yeah. I guess it's almost, you know, if we kind of bring it into what's happening just now with COVID, you know, there'll be a lot of people kind of changing direction, a lot of people doing, or we know for a fact, a lot of people are using new technologies to do different things. And, you know, I think, you know, sometimes it takes a bit of a crisis to kind of shake things up.
Yeah, but, definitely. You
know, for us back then, that was really the kind of pivot moment. You know, as Paul said, we were making a lot of money, but we were also spending, in fact, we were spending a little bit more than we were earning. So it's quite disconcerting,
it's funny because for a lot of people, their goal is to own a cake shop. It was mine. My goal was to own a cake shop. Mm. And 5 years later, and we sold the cake shop and we're like, why did we think that was a good idea? But it is for a lot of people to have a retail outlet, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's the key thing is what, you know, if you really ask yourself, or, you know, anybody going into or starting this, ask themselves the kind of really deep, meaningful question is, you know, what is it you want to be doing in 3 or 5 years' time? And, you know, owning a cake shop is, you know, for a lot of people, that is the, you know, the kind of aim and objective. But, you know, there needs to be something else. There needs to be, you know, do you need to earn money? Well, of course, if you're not earning money, you're not going to be motivated to get up on a dark February morning when, you know, you've got baking to do and customers to see, etc. So, there are some great cake shops out there, but a lot of people use it as a transitional stepping stone, I think.
I think it's a scratch that's itched by a lot of people. Until you've actually had the shop, then you realise what it actually entails. And it's just a learning process. It's, as we say, I think being in business is like a roller coaster. You just get ready for the ups and the downs.
Yeah. Oh yes.
And I think that's the bit very few people see are the downs, don't they? They might see, you know, the lovely cake shop and driving about in the cake van and making all these lovely cakes that they post on Facebook. I think those of us who have been in business, we have had shops and things, you know, like anything, there's another side to it. There is I still believe that there is money to be made in it. There's good job satisfaction to be had, but, you know, it's not for everybody.
I actually miss it. David, we have this argument all the time. I actually miss having a cake shop. But when we first started out, we had one little shop with the three staff. So it was myself and two other staff, and we did everything. That was it. But then, of course, the sort of entrepreneurial side kicks in, and like, we could have another shop.
Yeah.
A shop in Edinburgh. Well, let's have a shop in Glasgow. And of course, we're actually looking back. The one advice we'd have given ourselves was we should just put the prices up for the cakes. Just kept to one shop, put the prices up, and we'd have made more money doing that way. But of course, that one thing, and it's a good thing, but the Scottish enterprise and the business gateway, of course, they push you to grow because they want you to employ more staff, and we were very lucky to be have a lot of help and funding through the Prince's Trust. So of course you get the funding, but you don't think, well, the reason they're giving the funding because they want you to grow into a big business. But we wouldn't be where we are without the help.
I think that's it. I mean, if we kind of look back when we had that shop in Linlithgow, I think it was, well, I know for a fact it was 823 square feet. So it wasn't a big shop, and we were baking cakes in there, we're taking wedding appointments, and we had the kind of retail, we were selling balloons. But at that point, we were actually at our most profitable. Numbers-wise, that shop brought in about 250,000 a year, and it gave, you know, Paul and I think we were, between us, but it was something like £50,000 or £60,000 profit that we were able to take from the business.
Wow.
And, you know, which is quite good for, you know, for cake shop percentages. And of course,
that's
for
right.
me,
We were putting out between 18 and 25 wen cakes a week during the summer. About six cakes a week. So it was a 100 hours a week job.
But, I mean, so whilst, you know, whilst that profit sounds amazing, when you look at the hours that you put in.
No, there was no, I missed a whole, my 20s didn't exist on a social scale. It was cake shop all the way.
Yeah.
But I think the, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, if you broke that down to an hourly rate, I've often said that the European Working Directive came in when we had the shop, and it was, you're only allowed to work so many hours a week. And of course, that if that transferred to business owners or cake business owners, then it, I think we'd all be in jail, wouldn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was a very long. That was a long answer for that first question.
That's quite right. It's a good answer.
We've kind of covered the second question as well about your retail business was very successful, and it was a conscious stopping of one side of the business to pursue the other. So it sounds like it was a natural progression. There's no question about that. Yeah. Do you want to give our listeners a quick rundown of what Cakeflix is and what it offers and who your viewers are?
Yeah, so... well, Cakeflix, when we previously, it was Paul, well, the whole kind of story started, it was Paul Bradford Designer Cakes back in 2002. And then as Paul started doing more teaching, it became Paul Bradford Sugarcraft School. But throughout the whole time, since 2002, we've kept the same company number. So, you know, throughout that process, it's always been the same. And then, of course, a couple of years ago, we kind of saw the direction that things were going in, and our plan back then was to, you know, kind of rebrand to Cakeflix to make it a little bit more all-encompassing, you know, for more inclusive, because while it was Paul Bradford Sugarcraft School, some people might not be as keen to work under another person's name, another cake artist's name.
Yeah.
But in neutralising the name to Cakeflix, it allows us to do what we're doing just now. Nobody feels kind of, you know, although Paul's very much upfront and central, you know, an integral part of Cakeflix, you know, is a neutral name. And, you know, so it's what we wanted to do was to kind of appeal to a wider range of artists and customers. So a couple of years ago, when we went down the Cakeflix route, the idea was that we would pay artists at home to create their own tutorials. And I think we had about three or four that have done it, you know, on and off for us. But, you know, the concept, I think it was before its time. But, you know, right now, obviously with COVID again, you know, everybody who's got a camera is now creating online tutorials, which you know, that we could see that was coming anyway. But, you know, in terms of who Cakeflix are, you know, our aim is to keep growing the brand. You know, we're now out in all the apps and streaming services. So our aim is to start reaching out to new audiences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I mean, our kind of target market has always been the kind of home baker stroke, somebody who's looking to kind of get into business. And, you know, we kind of pitch ourselves more at the beginner to intermediate style. I know that there are other online schools who maybe are a little bit more specialist and, you know, do things slightly differently. But, you know, so our kind of target audience has always been the kind of broadly the kind of beginner to intermediates, home baker or small business owner.
Before we started recording this morning, we were looking, and Sammy, you came up with a figure of like thousands and thousands of tutorials on Cakeflix.
1,198 off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Right. So let's start with the tutorials. So there's a huge library for all levels of cake makers and styles, from baking to full structural cakes. Where do you go to keep your content fresh, and how do you decide what to make next and which guests to have on?
Yeah, well, it's when we first launched the business, because we had the cake shop for 10 years, of course, I just used the back stock of all the cakes we've been making that were popular from the customer's point of view. So we launched making just the regular, you know, cakes that we're making every day. So it was nice and easy, because it was the kind of cakes that you were making every day. And then that started to dry out because obviously trends change very quickly.
Yeah.
And then we had to start sort of, you know, coming up with different concepts. So we started off having meetings and we would have group discussions and we'd reach out to our members, which we still do to this day, we'd reach out to the members. I actually now have when we had the cake shop, for instance, we every January I would go away on holiday. We'd have a week off in the first week in January, and on the 7 days we were away, but the seventh day I'd already designed the 12 new wedding cake styles for the new season. It just happened naturally. So the time I went back into the shop, I knew what I was going to do, and I just made them. And what's happened is it now happens with cake flicks. On a very same thing. Sometimes it can be right up to 1 hour before we go live, believe it or not. So generally what I do, the day before I'm filming, I think of a few ideas. I go to bed and then I wake up in the morning and I know exactly what I'm going to make. And that's probably 50% of the cakes that I make. And then the other side is obviously just looking at trends. I try not to do trend cakes that are completely new, because the one thing I don't like the thought of is if another artist has came up with a technique and all of a sudden it's on cake flicks, or we're using it on cake flicks, and we just don't want to steal anyone's thunder, because everyone develops things and everything changes. It's like fashion, isn't it? So yeah. You know, every retail shop has a similar style of clothes, and so it can naturally happen. So I generally stay away from doing the, like, for instance, when the Isomalt, you know, the Geo cake came out, everyone was asking me to do it. And I thought, well, actually, I don't know who first came up with that idea. But if I just go away and do it, I just feel like I'm stealing that idea from someone who I don't even know who's came up with the idea anyway. So that type of very on-trend stuff, I tend to steer away, and unless I come up with it myself, obviously, my own design. So that's how it works. And, of course, the cake artists, quite a lot of cake artists actually approach us nowadays.
Okay.
But in the old days, we would go out to approach cake artists, people who maybe who are my idols, or who I really loved in the cake world. We would reach out and just see if they said yes, and sometimes we got a hit and sometimes we didn't get a hit. So some people are really scared by the thought of filming, even just now we sometimes struggle. So it's quite exciting, but nowadays we get so many people asking to be on cake flicks, so it's quite a, I think some people have got that as their on the bucket list type thing.
One thing to tick off their list before they die.
To feature on cake flicks.
It's a good ambition.
Well, I know, Paul Bradford, you are one of my idols. So I can understand totally what you're saying.
It's a little bit similar to the podcast. We kind of reach out to people and hope they go, yes.
You can imagine the dance we did when you said you'd come on and do art.
Brilliant.
What do you see as the main attraction about having an online school over a physical school, both for you and your students?
Yeah, so the online school, just for me personally, you know, and David, but it obviously, as soon as we started the online, it became a world sort of attraction, if that makes sense. So instead of just being very much a Scottish, England and Ireland customer base, all of a sudden we had the whole world, and for me, it was quite a fast track. It happened very quickly, and all of a sudden we had students all over the world. And I think at one point we worked out with a student, and it was all but how many?
I think it was five countries recognised by Google that we didn't have members.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. When you
I think most of them, they didn't have internet, so I suppose.
Yeah. And so what happened was, very quickly, we started getting asked to teach abroad. So my first teaching gig was Italy, and cake design was very new there. So I had to actually drive to Italy because they didn't have any of the tools. So, so way back then, it was I had to take all the cakes, the ganache. I didn't have to take the ganache, actually. That was the only thing I didn't have to take. I took the cakes, because their cakes back then were very, very light, and you couldn't really carve with them. And when you sent a recipe over, they just thought it was crazy. So I used to pack the cake, pack all my tools, drive to Italy, and do some teaching over there. And it was almost like I was like this cake god, because everywhere I went, there was all these crowds of like cake colleges, sort of culinary colleges, want to come and see this guy making these cakes. So that's how it all started. And that's all because of course, the online side of things. And then last year, it's very spooky, because last year I peaked with my traveling last year, even though a couple of years ago I said I wasn't going to keep on traveling, and I peaked at 46 flights last year.
Wow,
which was a lot of flying. So I made a conscious decision at the end of last year that I didn't want to do a lot of flying this year, which was very, very lucky. Because I had to cancel 46 flights this year. I think that would have been that could have been a full-time job. trying to get those flights back. So that this year, obviously, we launched a couple of new businesses, and that's why we didn't want to do much flying this year. So it's been, it's kind of worked pretty well for us.
So when you do your tutorials, it's very obvious you're thinking through your thought process, you know, and it's really interesting that it's not like a finished product that you've done before, but you're actually thinking through, you change things as you go. Is that a conscious thing, or is that just a style that's developed as you've started to do it?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So when we first launched, we were trying to make it like a BBC production. And we were trying to make it, you know, cut out all the mistakes and just have it refined. And then we sort of started doing more filming. And the guy Paul Doffman that used to help us, he started, because they film little movies as well with their friends, and they have a movie club. And he was like, I think we need to try and make it a little bit more real life. And, you know, maybe let's keep in some of the mistakes. And I really liked the idea, because of course when you teach attending classes, people love when you do make a mistake, because when I first started teaching, you try and do it perfect, and then that's when it kind of happened at the same time. I realized that people like you making mistakes. They like to see you thinking that didn't work, but it was a very natural progression. It wasn't just one day we decided to film that way, and it's now to the point where we have to remember to cut some of it out. Can't keep it all in, or it does make it look very unprofessional.
It's real life, isn't it? It's you know, it's how people make cakes, isn't it?
I think that's where the Russian, how I design the cakes, and there's no preparation done, and it seems to be those are the tutorials that people prefer, because I'm actually going through the whole design process. So, for instance, this week I'm filming it's a very similar to Mario Kart type of cake, 3D cake, and I'm going to make something similar, but it's not going to be the same. So of course it's been in my head, but we're filming tomorrow, and the only preparation I'll have before filming is I'll have the cake baked, the ganache made, and the wood, the jigsaw cutter, and a power drill, and the whole thinking process will be done during the tutorial.
That's brilliant. It makes it nice for us to watch, because then the mistakes that you may make, if we make them, we'll know that that's normal progression of the cake making.
Yeah, I think it lets people see that. I mean, there's times where I'll make a whole section and I'll say, okay, no, do you know what? I don't like it, or that's not going to work. Okay, let's just, I'm going to remove that, and then I'm going to have a wee cup of tea, and then when I come back, I'm going to start it again.
So when you go off and say, I'm just going to have a clean down, you're actually having a cuppa.
Yeah. A wee cup of tea and a biscuit.
We think the professional and business tips and alternatives at the end of each tutorial is a great idea. Was it always your intention to be talking to cake makers that are running a business? And how have you developed that idea? Because we see David now has a whole business tutorials online.
I think right to the beginning, I think we were about 6-7 months in when we were, you know, very much just finding our feet. This was back in 2011 when we just launched. And a lot of the questions that we were getting were from people saying, how much would you charge? And, you know, what's the right pricing structure for this? So we realized back then that there was certainly an appetite for people to learn more of the business stuff. So that's when I started filming. And it's embarrassing because we still have a lot of these videos on the website now. So it was basically me and my laptop and a pretty poor quality mic, just doing these little videos. But they seem to have been well received. But every time I look at them, I kind of cringe and think, right, we really need to get them refilmed with a bit more upbeat and a bit more using a bit more tech. But you know, the messages remain the same, and you know, I think pricing is the one thing that I think for most cake decorators they really struggle with.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's you know, the idea of giving some, you know, Paul giving some indication at the end for the pro members in the video, and for the pro members, you know, the business tutorials, you know, give them full kind of pricing structures, and you know, a lot of cake decorators, they sometimes, what's the right way of saying it without being too critical, but you know, they don't like the kind of spreadsheet work. They don't like the analysis that really needs to go in,
yeah,
in order to come up with the information.
Breaking down all the prices. And
I guess it's because we come into it as creatives, don't we? We don't ever think we're going to have to run a business out of this.
Yeah.
But I think that's the other part of it, isn't it? Because most people, I mean, if you take Paul as a kind of prime example, he wanted to run have his own cake shop. And then because it was successful, he ended up taking on staff. So before he knew it, he was a manager rather than a cake artist.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people, that's when the kind of passion can become a little bit more draining, because the creatives, you know, if you've got somebody who's working at the extreme on the creative side, then they don't really, you know, just generalizations, but left and right side of the brain, you know, you usually have a favor to one of them. And if somebody is really good out in the creative side, it's very unlikely that they're going to be a whiz on Excel or enjoy sitting down to do a VAT return. So
I can hear Sammy laughing for a reason back there.
Does it sound familiar?
But that's why if you're that one person in a business, you have to be both. And we're lucky in that, I mean, I'm just not creative at all when it comes to anything artistic. And, you know, Paul's not so keen on the spreadsheets. So, you know, we've got this happy balance. And that's what we always say. If there's one part that you need to, you know, find people that can help you outsource what you really struggle with. Because if you stop enjoying what you're doing, it's not going to be long until, you know, you have to close your doors.
We see you're really keen on collaboration, and you get guests on and you're very giving to give them time and everything. But you've always had to compete to some extent with the free online resources. And obviously with coronavirus and the lockdown, there's been a huge surge in demand and supply for online learning. How do you move forward to compete with all these freebies that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of realised very early on that, you know, I mean, just use Paul as an example, you know, we had to cancel a lot of courses. And even though he was cutting his flights back, you know, there was Miami and other places that he was going away to teach, but, you know, all that got cancelled. So, you know, we knew if Paul was losing all the revenue that he had lost, and then all the other artists, I think Mark Suarez was a great example, because he had been filming with us just about 2 or 3 weeks before the lockdown. And Mark had, I think it was about 6 months back-to-back flights. He was going on a world tour. So these guys, you know, all of a sudden all their money's gone. And we knew it was that this was all happening anyway. You know, we can see with stats and viewer numbers and analytics that, you know, there was more and more free content, more and more online tutorial schools starting. And, of course, Facebook Lives make it very accessible and easy for people to go live. So at the start of the crisis, this was Paul's idea, you know, caking all over the world. We knew that if we just sat back and just expected to put out our weekly course and, you know, not do anything other than what we'd already been doing, we would have been lost in the tidal wave that was about to hit. So, you know, we had to get up front and ahead of it. So I guess we were lucky insofar as Spain went into lockdown a couple of weeks before the UK and certainly the US. So we kind of knew what was happening, and we were able to start caking all over the world. And again, we're lucky in that Paul had the contacts, and you know, we had a good fiber optic connection here, and with plenty of gap filling videos that we could use to create a big show. But we did realize at that stage, you know, and the argument is, are you shooting yourself in the foot? But you know, our thought process on it was, if we don't do it, I mean, not everybody's going to be doing their online, their free content, free videos anyway. And if we don't be a part of that, people will very quickly forget the name. So it became, you know, like a lot of businesses, you know, we had to look at getting through the crisis as a damage limitation exercise rather than, you know, a way of, you know, we you know, can be very honest about it. We have still lost a lot of subscribers, and we've got far fewer paying subscribers now than we had before the crisis. But it's just, you know, it's just that volume of content that's out there now. And, you know, I think that's the old saying, isn't it? The genie's out the bottle. So, you know, it's not going to go back in anytime soon. So we just have to, you know, we can see what the world's going to look like, you know, the cake world and the teaching world beyond. And if we hadn't been flexible in changing our approach or our business model very, very quickly, we would have, you know, we could well have been lost in the activities that are going on just now. But I think there will be a kind of levelling off, and you know, there's a lot of people putting in an awful lot of effort to put free content out there. But because there is so much coming on so often, some of the traction, some of the views aren't as appealing as maybe they had been. So, you know, there will be, it's like anything, everybody kind of rushes in to do and what they can. And, you know, people say, are you annoyed at Cake International, who are an events company, now doing online? No, absolutely not, because, you know, if the roles were reversed, we would be seeking whatever we needed to do in order to survive. And right now, online is a way that people can get exposure. Some people are making money from classes and things, and they can do it from home while lockdown's on. So, you know, I think the cake world was changing anyway, or certainly the online side where it was changing. And I think all, you know, what COVID's done has accelerated that process. But, you know, it's, you know, we're still in great shape. You know, we're still kind of up and out there. But, that there's no denying that extra competition, extra choice for people. And, you know, we've got a membership platform that's subscription-based, and we're asking people to pay when there is so much free content out there. So, you know, we have, you know, back in January, it was, so this is obviously before the crisis, we knew that price was an issue for some people. So we launched our apps. So we've got, you know, a membership service at £5 a month, less content. But, you know, so we're kind of trying to be aware of all the kind of pressure points that our customers have, and trying to deliver the best that we can for them, but at the same time making sure that we've got a sustainable model.
So on to the most recent Cakeflix developments. Please explain the concept of Cakeflix to us, and where the idea came from and where you see that going in the future.
Yeah, well, I think David's pretty much answered that, because the Cakeflix TV was a progression from the Caking All Over the World that we did. So if anyone didn't know what Caking Over the World was, we came up with an idea to try and keep people at home, was part of it. So the idea was a whole weekend, a whole Saturday, 12 hours of caking artists from all over the world who would give up an hour of their time to do a little demonstration. And the idea was it would keep people at home and give them something to do on a Saturday run, be tempted to go out, and also to help the cake artists who we knew very early on were going to be out of jobs because they couldn't travel. We've got so many friends that teach and make money from traveling. So it helped them keep their name alive, sort of their brand alive, brand awareness, really. And we thought it'd be a one or two event, and it ended up being about eight. We did nine weekends. So it took a week of talking to all the artists, helping with the technology. And then we spent probably 16 hours sat in the one seat with the whole production. And we did that for nine weekends. Mm-hmm. So it was full on. And even now, people are saying, please put it back on again. I was like, don't really want to be sitting for 60 hours on the seat again. So, and it's very stressful because it was all live. And, of course, all the sort of buffering stuff that was kind of going on.
And I'd imagine not everyone is as tech savvy as you guys are.
But we were sat with a smile on when we're doing live. My fingers are going 100 miles an hour trying to help someone who just can't press the live button or whatever it was going on. Or phone's the wrong way around, so it was all that kind of stuff going on, or we could see their cat sat on a shelf behind. Maybe not good for doing a cake tutorial. Maybe remove the cat.
Excellent.
Cute, but maybe not good. So then we just thought, we had we built up such a momentum, and so we just thought, how can we use this to go forward and actually have it part of our business. And as David said, the free content's out there. Why don't we have a platform that's got a large audience? So if you're going to film stuff, well, why not film stuff for Cakeflix? So what we do now is it's taken us about a month to get the right level. We launched with 28 shows a week, which was full on, and we produce them all because they send the content in, we edit them, and the idea is that they have a that. It's a 45 minutes of cake fun, showing people a little hints and tips on how to make different things. And there's no sales. That's the key thing. It's not a sales channel. It's purely that 45 minute of learning is learning. But we do have three adverts now to try and help the artist. So the artist gives their time up, but they get to film a sort of 60-second advert that we play during it. That's a direct sales to their online school, to their cake tools or ingredients. So we're scratching each other's backs. And then we have one of our adverts in that promotes Cakeflix Master, whatever that is. And then we have one space that's actually available for retail, and we sell that to any cake shops or magazines who want to have a slot on the show. So we now have 14 shows a week. They now run 8 p.m. UK time and 9 p.m. UK time for roughly an hour. And we do that Monday to Friday. And then at the weekends, we have Saturday, Sunday, and it's 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. midday, and that's on a Saturday and Sunday. And we do that. That's now the main focus of Cakeflix TV going forward. But the exciting thing is we've now launched them on YouTube. And this week we're now launching it on our app. So these videos will now be available on Apple TV, Amazon, Roku, Fire.
Wow.
So it means the artists are going to be seen on a much bigger scale, and they can now say their shows. They have a show on Apple TV, which sounds quite cool.
It really does.
Yeah. For the general public, gosh, that person's got a keep show on Amazon or TV. So it's very much still a baby business, but we hope over the next 12 months that we can hit really big numbers and it really becomes part of regular viewing for any cake fans.
Yeah. And you've also, you very, very briefly touched on it there. You've also recently launched the Cakeflix Master Program, which is accredited learning. So just explain how that's come about, what it is. And also there's like a little hint on the website that, there's two grayed out sections, that there may be more coming.
Yeah, so we've actually been speaking about launching what we had originally called our Cakeflix Diploma. And so we'd spoken about that about 4 or 5 years ago. We first kind of had mumblings, but as often happens, life gets busy, and it's one of these. We want to do it one day, but really about a year ago just now. Yeah, so it's last summer we thought, right, we are going to do this, and but when we started to look around and ask around, we thought, well, we want to do it in a more formal, footing. Because we can make the Cakeflix Diploma. Yeah, so we thought, well, we don't want to just do another, what could be seen as a David and Paul certificate, us marking our own homework, which would be the way it was we looked at it. So we went down the accreditation route, which, as you can imagine, is a lot of paperwork, a lot of form filling, a lot of regulatory stuff. And, you know, but it's been worth it because I think people appreciate that it is at that level now. It's not just, you know, so Paul marks the courses, and we're going to have Cecilia Young helping to mark and assess the courses. And then I have to oversee their assessments, and then I get reviewed and quality assured, etc. So it means when this certificate goes out, you know, I mean, so far we've had most people have been passing the assignments, but there have been a steady stream of failed and asked to resubmit because, you know, we really need to make sure that the standard is high.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You know, we want, I mean, Paul's vision for this certificate, this foundation, is that if a cake business owner, a cake shop owner, is interviewing for staff and somebody walks in with a Cake Flix master certificate, we want that cake shop owner to know that that certificate actually means something. It's not just something that, you know, you can, you know, I mean, attended course certificates, it's just, that's exactly what it is. It's a certificate of attendance, whereas this is a certificate of, you know, quality assured training that you've passed. So, and we were delighted because just before we launched, it was externally assessed and graded at educational level 3, which is an A-level standard in England.
That's so good.
So that this is just the foundation course. So,
so you can do an A-level in cake decorating, basically, is what you're saying. I'll do it. I'll go back to college.
I had some students say they've not got an A-level, but they're quite happy with an A-level in cake design. So quite sweet.
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, but although, you know, that there's still a few meetings to be had, but what we may be able to do is to more align the intermediate and advanced with more formal qualifications. You know, it could be an HNC, HND, but, you know, we're just not sure exactly when that will happen, whether we launch the intermediate and advanced and then try and align them up. But, you know, we've certainly, that's, you know, looking at business models, and we've touched on it during the conversation that, you know, I think pretty much everybody with a phone and an internet connection that can make cakes is now doing video content, which, again, no problems with that. But we need to adjust our business model to take account of that. And, you know, where we see, I mean, we're certainly going to be keeping, as Paul mentioned, the apps, the membership, but the learning for us is probably the area that we're, you know, can see. I mean, nobody else is doing what we are doing. And, you know, what we want to do is to make sure that we keep out in front with it. So we need to kind of work hard to get intermediate and advanced out there, but also just making sure that the reputation of Cake Flix Master is, you know, it's something worth achieving.
Yeah,
I think when one of the questions that people get asked all the time, and how do you really know, is what level of cake design are you? Are you a beginner, intermediate, or advanced? Because there's no formal levels being published anywhere. So of course you could be advanced in one section, but you're beginner on another section. Where the idea of Cake Flix Master is that once you've completed the intermediate, you're an intermediate cake artist on every level. It could be royal icing, chocolate work, you know, sugar flowers, sculpting, wedding cakes. So you're intermediate level in all categories, which I think has been missing from the cake world for a long time.
Yeah, because I know when I interviewed for staff, someone may come in and be amazing at flowers, but actual baking was quite slow, and so it is really difficult to judge that. So yeah, to have an overall, you know, an across the board.
For a cake
like qualification,
shop, essential, isn't it? I mean, the problem with sugar flowers are they take so long to make. We had the same thing. We'd hire someone who had the most amazing sugar flowers, but of course their hourly rate was over through the roof because it took so long to make flowers. So we used to outsource the flower making to flower makers because it was better that way. And then we just did all the core business. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the big thing we like to say, it's like a building a house. And if you have all of the foundations correctly put together within the cake world, then you're going to be a great cake artist. If you only work on one part of that foundation, it's kind of letting the rest of the house down, the rest of your, you know, your business down. So we want to really make sure that everyone's got the foundations for each level, which will make them an overall great cake designer.
What do you wish you had known when you started out, both in the cake making business and when starting the online school?
I think
I think hindsight is always the best gift, isn't it? You know, I think if we were starting out again with the cake business, I think, you know, we would have stuck to the one shop, and I think we would have, you know, kind of grown things that way. But the thing is, when we did grow, we learnt so much with the growth that it allowed us to, you know, when we went to do the online tutorials, you know, I could write the business courses with a lot of confidence, knowing that we'd been through a lot of the pain points that people were experiencing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had to go through that to kind of get to where we are. You know, we made a lot of mistakes on the way through, you know, just as most people do. So I'd like to think that if we were starting again, we would have learned from these lessons and we wouldn't repeat the same mistakes. But and the same goes with the online tutorials. When we started, when we launched, Craftsy came on board 2 weeks later, and we had no idea that they were working away doing what they were doing. And you know, but at that point, we were very much at this proof of concept, because in the first 2 or 3 years we went to Cake International, nobody really got the online tutorial side that well.
Right. So
they were all coming up, just buy a DVD. Can you not send it in a DVD?
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, things are moving forward from that. But, you know, so it actually took Netflix. But when Netflix really took hold, that was the easiest thing. We just said, look, it's like Netflix for cakes.
Right.
You pay a subscription, you get the content, and, you know, that's how it works. But, you know, looking back, I mean, the online tutorials has been very, very good to us, and it's allowed us to do a lot of travelling. It's got Paul's name out to pretty much every corner of the world, thankfully. And, so it has been very, very good to us. And, yes, there have been some mistakes and some things we'd do differently, but not as many, I wouldn't say, as, you know, when we look back at our journey with the cake shops and the staffing and things like that, that was almost a vertical learning curve at many times, whereas the online tutorials has been, you know, a little bit softer in terms of learning things.
Mm.
But, it's just...
I always refer to a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in business is going to be a roller coaster. And, you know, over the years we've just learned we can now predict the ups and the downs more. So we just tighten the seatbelt more when we know there's a down. and the one thing we're very good at is we're not scared of change. A lot of people are scared of change. I'm probably more towards change more than David, but we're not scared to take risks and change if we feel it's necessary.
Well, the way we, Paul and I, kind of align ourselves is that he's like a speedboat for change. So Paul will change direction in a second, whereas I'm more of an oil tanker. I like to consider it, and I'm quite happy to change, but I need to know exactly and slowly.
Does he do that thing of planting the seed of an idea that then has to take shape in your head?
Every morning.
I constantly plant seeds. Every so often one works, one sprouts.
One takes root.
Unfortunately, many don't.
Yeah, my husband says that about me. He says, you always plant these little seeds, and then 2 weeks later, you just sit there nodding at me going, yeah, I know this. I know this. So what's the best compliment you received over your entire careers in all this?
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking you were going to ask me that question, and it's and strangely enough, it's and I said to David, "Do you agree?" And he said, "Yes." And it was actually when we launched the online school. Every so often, it seemed to be a good time these things come in. You know, when you maybe get a complaint or something, you're on a down day, and then all of a sudden it's like a little angel sends you a message, and I remember this day we had something happened and it was a negative review, and you know, you take it to heart because you work so hard. And then this email came in, and it was a lady, and her son was dying of cancer, or you know, I don't want to go into too much detail. And it was, you know, and she'd found Kate Flicks, and they watched Kate Flicks every day.
Wow.
The year that it happened, she said it was what got them through every day, was watching Kate Flicks.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So I can feel myself welling up just talking about it.
Yeah, that's proper lump in throat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh. Sorry. Every time I see it, I start crying. I'm crying again.
He's had to get tears going.
Oh, finishing on the emotional end.
That is the best answer. We ask that question for everybody, but that is the best answer that we've been given, I think.
Incredible.
Is there anything we should have asked you but we haven't that you can think of?
Well, it's interesting because I think the magic probably between how this has all happened for us, this for me it's been 20 years, is actually the fact that we're partners. A lot of partners can work together. And when we first talked about David giving up and come to work, a lot of people thought it was a big risk because, you know, obviously working with family and but for us, it's been a sort of perfect. I don't venture into David's side of the business, and he never ventures into my side of the business. David pushes me to do things that I wouldn't want to do. And it's really been a great, you know, we very rarely fall out. It's probably one thing that if I could rent David out to all the cake shops, I think we could make money.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. I've always said David, everyone should have every cake shop should have a David. Just so the cake artist can enjoy making the cakes.
Yeah.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Oh.
So we haven't touched on it at all, and I don't know whether you want to answer, but what's happening with your wedding?
Well, yeah, unfortunately,
wasn't that meant to be this year?
It was supposed to be July, but with the whole thing, we had family coming from all over the world, and we didn't know what was going to happen, so we have postponed it.
Okay.
So it was supposed to be 25th of July was the the big day. So we've not 100% confirmed the next year's date, but it will probably be the same time next year.
Right.
But we're going to wait and see because things change.
They do.
we've got some family who are still hoping to come this year anyway. So we're kind of half still trying to get we've only been in this house a couple of years, so the big push was to have it all ready. We're going to have the whole party was going to be in the garden. So we kind of stopped working on it over the whole sort of, because I was so busy doing the caking all over the world. And all of a sudden, we've got friends and family saying, I think we're going to come. I need to get the decor finished. I need to get the packing finished. unfortunately, our caterer passed away during the... it wasn't. I think it was a knock-on effect because she lost all her business over because of it, and unfortunately she had a heart attack. So it was a bit of a shock.
Oh my word!
Yeah, and she was doing everything for us apart from the ceremony. So that was a bit of a shock. That was a bit of a shocker. But the good thing is I love gardening, so it gives me a year to get the garden look even better.
Yes, your garden will be magnificent. Right, so this is your publicity opportunity. Where do we find you? What are your websites, your social links, etc., etc.?
Yep, so the website is cakeflicks.com. For that's for our premium and pro members. And we have a 7-day free trial on just now. So if you want to try before you buy, that sounds so cheesy, but that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And that gives you access to all the premium tutorials. So not the business ones, but all the premium tutorials for 7 days. And then we have our brand new baby, which is cakeflicks.tv. And that's on the apps. And that is only £5 a month. And that gives you access to all the relevant up-to-date tutorials on the cakeflicks.tv. And we'll also be launching our Cakeflicks members, all the guests, the little mini videos. So that's where they're going to be hosted as well as part of the Cakeflix TV.
Just need to say that all premium and pro members get complimentary access to the apps and Cakeflix.tv.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And we're on Instagram. We're on Pinterest.
Facebook.
Facebook.
YouTube. Yeah.
So,
YouTube.
So you have a big group on Facebook as well, don't you?
Yeah, over the pandemic, we've went from being 180,000, and now we've got 211,000.
Oh, wow.
Business page.
The business page.
Yeah, so we've got the Cakeflix Cake Community group, which I think's, 14,000.
Yeah. So the community one is for just anyone who loves cake, and it's just a place to share your cake designs. So it's not somewhere to share tutorials, or it's just sharing your love of what cakes you've been making. And then for our members, we also have our pro group, and we have our Cakeflix family group as well.
Wow.
So quite a lot of groups going on.
I don't even want to think how much admin that must take.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been lovely chatting, and it's funny, it brings back lots of memories, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's been really
it's been fantastic listening. Thank you so much. Thank you
very much for listening to our podcast, and thanks once again to Paul and David from Cakeflix. You've both been totally amazing. Thanks for coming on. Please find links in the description for the details of everything we have discussed in this episode. Happy business and happy baking. Bye from me, Sammy, and goodbye from Bronya.